batten down the hatches, pull down the sails, the storm is coming. What's that storm? The storm of This Week in Mormons is now in your earlobes. Here we are, rocking the boat. Will we steady the seas? No one knows. Always be closing. Always.
Oh, Jeff.
Al, before the show, was trying to introduce me to the profanity-laden rants of Alec Baldwin and Glenn Ross.
Don't go watch that. That's a bad recommendation.
That was his suggested prep for our recording today. He said, watch Alec Baldwin yell.
You know what you need to record a Mormon podcast in this town? You need brass balls, Jeff.
I'm editing that out.
You can't edit that out. Jeff, I've said much worse. Give me that. If you take that out, it ruins all the flow of the show. And if I get one complaint about my use of the term brass balls, I'll never say it again. That's not true. I'm sorry. I couldn't.
I think I'm going to make a post that's just called Reasons Why Al Is Not Married. Everyone does, you know, reasons, 20 reasons why I'm
married. Make it,
blah, blah,
make
blah,
it
blah.
A community contributable post. And I feel like we can get a lot of people to chime in.
Okay.
What would you say, Jeff? Is it because I have not vulgar, but coarse language?
It might be because you're also holding a boomerang for reasons unknown.
Boomerangs are a real thing, Jeff. This is handmade in Australia.
You've never even been to Australia.
That's technically not true because I stopped over in an airplane.
Yeah, okay. So did you buy that in the gift shop? Did you get that at Hudson News?
No, my mom got this for me when she was down there because she said, what would a 32-year-old man like? He'd like a boomerang. Thank you. And it's true.
It sounds delightful. I'm thrilled for you.
I'm afraid to throw it because I don't want to try and catch it when it comes back.
Well, also,
isn't that true about so many things in life? We don't throw it because when it comes back, are we going to be ready? Are we going to have the skills it takes to catch? So a lot of us in life,
yes,
never let go of the boomerang. You know, we never send the boomerang off because what if it doesn't come back? Or what if it does come back, but too much mustard on the proverbial hot dog and there's just a little zip to it?
Yeah.
And we're in trouble. Then what?
Call Elder Bednar. This is Elder Bednar's object story for the next conference right here.
My mom got me a boomerang.
After he shares with us the pickles and it was the load, he will now move on to Dingo Ate My Baby.
he's had a couple of good ones, a few odd ones. The one that was my favorite was when he talked about how he'd sat down on the floor and wrote a bunch of things about the scripture on note cards and had them all over the floor. And I forget what he was doing with them, but it was a new way of scripture study. I was like,
That sounds
interesting.
That sounds like a montage in either a quirky rom-com about reasons to date somebody or a David Fincher-esque murder type movie.
A scripture study strategy?
Writing stuff, putting things on post-it notes? This is the kind of stuff you only see in movies. Like you're writing it out, trying to find the clues, drawing lines on walls.
Or that one Liam Neeson's wife goes to jail and he breaks her out. Maybe not Liam Neeson.
No, that's Russell Crowe. The next 3 days. That movie's awful.
Yeah. Oh, but there were so many postcards.
And you see great footage of Pittsburgh. So
finally.
I'm a strong proponent of Pittsburgh.
Yeah. You're a strong proponent of all cities that are awful.
No. Name another city that's awful. Pittsburgh is a great city. You hate it because you go to the convention center.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Placentia.
Actually, I'm not much of a proponent for my hometown.
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps every city in Spain.
But Tamale Fest in Placentia every December is a lot of fun.
I don't know. Perhaps D.C., the place where I'm moving.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I'm officially out of Salt Lake. I packed up a Penske truck full of... Penske was great to me, by the way.
I'm sure they were delightful.
Packed up a truck, me and my roommate, on Sunday morning, and I headed out. And here I am. So now, here was the thing. 20-some years of Tetris preparation for this move. This is the first time I've owned enough furniture to need a truck. First time I've owned furniture, for that matter.
Uh-huh.
And so as I packed it up, this was my first foray into ever having enough stuff to require a truck. And literally, I mean, it was like a trailer park family with a storage unit. It was just piled in there on top of things. The couch was on its side. glass tables sitting there, and I would wrap them with a quilt and just hope they wouldn't break. Like, it was a rough setup, Jeff. I was not proud of my skills, of my packing skills. And you would not have been proud of me either.
But you made it work. You made it work.
And it made it all the way there. See, I love that moment where you're like, if I close the door, this stuff isn't shaking too bad. It'll be great. It'll hold. You know, it'll stay.
Sure.
And then you cross that one bridge in Wyoming where the wind almost blows you over. And everything gets rattled up a little bit. And you're saying, all right, well, maybe I should have strapped that down. I get it now. I get it.
This is another parable. Unfortunately, we strap it down.
Can't
we reside in the good ship Zion without our life vests and seatbelts? No.
I'm going to use this in a talk someday.
You must.
No, but unfortunately, nothing broke, so I did not learn my lesson. I will continue to do it in a haphazard way, and that's just the way it's going to work.
Well, I'm excited that you had a good journey. I hope you got some good NICMOs in Utah before you left. I hope that was
none,
fruitful.
Jeff. None. That's very, not my style. No. Very fruitful. Also, I came back from Europe, and I was very jet-lagged. I just chose to not go out.
Okay, fair enough. Well, good for you. Glad you're safe and sound. Utah was fun. We had a good experiment. A noble experiment, even.
Yeah, no, that was 3 years I'd been out there off.
No, you were there for 2 years.
No. 3.
You only had the lease on your place for 2 years.
Remember my house in Sugar Hood with Lance Moss? Delightful young man.
I forgot about that wonderful place. It's true.
That's an extra year, Jeff. That's 3 years. That's longer than I've lived anywhere in my entire life.
Congratulations.
Outside of Missouri.
Okay.
And California.
Okay.
And Hawaii.
Yes.
Outside of those places.
Al likes to claim being a Californian like he lived in the urban jungle. He lived in the Salinas Valley. This was Steinbeck country, people. The man lived in farm communities of California with maybe a few more streetlights, because Hamilton has no streetlight. So
what are you talking about, man? Salinas is an awful town.
It is an awful town. My father grew up in Salinas. You know that.
Yeah, that is not an easy town.
My father grew up with your mom.
Preppy.
Don't you love that my dad grew up with your mom, like in the same ward? Isn't that weird?
You leave my mom out of this, Jeff.
Isn't that funny? My dad described Al's mom as, oh, old Jenny Fish. She was a babe. She was a looker.
Good times.
Al and I could have been brothers.
We may be. That's why we've never made out, because we're sure.
It's the only reason. It's related. The only reason why. We don't want to mix it up. It's just wrong. Yeah. Terrible.
I like that now you've revealed every security question on any banking platform I've ever had. From Salinas, and mother's maiden name is Fish. Thanks.
Well, I feel like you gave it away because you talk about your grandma Fish, so it only makes sense.
Yeah, all right.
That's actually, I was thinking this as I said it. Is it okay that I'm saying his mom's maiden name? Yes, because we've publicly disclosed your grandparents' name.
No, it's not right.
I think it's okay. But if you want me to edit this out, I will.
No, I need to go and change my security passwords now.
Okay.
It's a real thing. Jeff, identity theft is a real problem in this nation.
I know. You subscribe to LifeLock. I know.
Nation, it's a problem. Anyway, how was your week, Jeff? How have you been?
I've been okay. We're taking off this weekend. We're flying to Phoenix.
You've earned a vacation.
Well, it was going to be for friends. We got some good friends of ours out here in D.C. are getting married in Phoenix, so we're flying out there for that.
And then they didn't get married. They're not getting married.
They're getting married, but my grandma passed away on Saturday.
I saw that on Facebook, actually.
So, upside is don't have to do another planned trip or anything, because we're staying with my sister.
Way to look at the silver lining in grandma's.
No, death. It's at least it's nice in that sense. I mean, because we're staying with my sister out in Mesa anyway, but instead we're just going to pile into her car and drive out home for a day or two and do funeral stuff and then still come back and fly out of Phoenix and come home. So, that's what's going to go down. I think my wife still might go to the wedding to have somebody there since we RSVP'd. But so it'll be funeral stuff this weekend. But my Grams was a good. I've never called her Grams before either. She was my abuela, and she led a good life. She's been sick for a while, so this wasn't shocking or anything. It's been kind of in the works for a little while, but it's still sad to see her go. And we will.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that, Jeff.
Thanks. We will. She was a good lady. We will celebrate her in style. She would enjoy being celebrated. Unlike my grandfather, who was a very humble and meek man, did not want attention for any great thing. Nothing. He just didn't care about stuff.
That's like me. Absolutely.
Yeah. My grandma, though, she wants the awards. We've already been joking that we need to get out every award she's ever won and put it on display at her reception in her honor, because that's what she would want. She wants to be recognized for how wonderful for the thing.
She was a pretentious snob.
No, she was not a pretentious snob, but she
who loved everybody to just look at her.
She was more formally traditional, I guess, in the sense that she appreciated recognition for the things she achieved.
She sounds like the worst, but I'm excited for the Mexican food that'll be at the
You can't funeral. Say that my recently dead grandma is the worst. That just goes against friendship code. What's wrong with you?
Jeff, you know that I'm all for
I loved my grandma. My grandma and I had a birthday 2 days
That's
apart.
That's not what it sounds like. It sounds like you weren't very close.
No, we were very close. I grew up with my grandparents. They're only 15 minutes away. And our birthday's 2 days apart. And so every year
She's a trophy seeker. That's how you described her. She only married your grandpa because he had abs. He was a Vivint salesman, and you know it.
You're going to do the show on your own now. I'm leaving.
I'm out. That's it. I'm out.
This is an inappropriate reaction from you.
I'm sorry your grandma died. That sucks.
It stinks. I always have memories of it. So the point is, we had birthdays close together. So every year when we had celebrations, we would always celebrate together. So I'll always enjoy that, because I mean, there are lots of little things, but it's always like me and grandma would always share the cake and blow out the candles together, because always right there, 2 days apart.
This is an inappropriate response to this.
You don't know what friendship is.
Yes, I do, Jeff. I'm cheering you up.
You have had family ones that have had health scares and things happen. And have I just made a mockery of the situation?
My family doesn't seek truth. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, Jeff. My family
what do you call your mother's YouTube channel? If that's not just begging for the adulation of one's peers, I don't know what else is.
I call it creating jobs for America. What does Obama call it?
Taxing you for creating jobs for America.
I don't know what he calls it.
Making you buy health care for people whose jobs you have created. unfortunate, but it'll be good to be home and see family for the weekend, by the way.
And you'll be in Arizona, where it's very warm. And in D.C. right now, it's very cold, yes?
Oh, yeah, it's 35-ish. Yeah, it's chilly.
Sweet.
Not too bad.
I'm excited to make that my home. I think I got a place out there. I think I've got it all settled.
I don't know if we have it settled, but sure.
I got a place. What more do you need?
You found a sublet. That was one step.
Jeff.
We still have to find you the man pad in Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Come on.
All right. Now that, yeah, okay.
Okay. I know
all right,
these parts.
All right, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
You're gonna lead me, guy. Me and your friend from DC, Joey Peterson, we went out to breakfast on Saturday, and he was also giving me suggestions on where to live. He said, "Live anywhere except for Crystal City."
Okay. Joseph's gonna listen to this. Don't listen to Joseph. Joseph likes to live in weird places. I'll just say that about him.
He said, and I quote: "Jeff convinced us to move to this hole of a neighborhood that he lives in. And it was the worst neighborhood ever, but because he was there, he feels like it's good because it's cheap." I was like, yeah, all right. So Jeff's a value seeker. That's fair. He's like, no, it's the worst place I've ever lived in my life. And I said, was it because Jeff was there? And he said, no, not so much Jeff, but
sure.
More the crazy neighbors and like the paper thin walls and the drug bust going on all around and like all that jibber jabber. I was like, well, that sounds like Jeff's
home. This is what he said. Huh? So he said this was the worst place he ever lived.
End quote.
Okay, fair enough.
Jeff, you've lived there. You guys find value in the value proposition.
Al, you've been to my apartment. I asked you, does it
there
does
are
it
bars appear? On the window, Jeff, and it's a walk up. Thanks.
No, the bars on the window, that's the balcony with the railing. You're confused about the way it works. I have a view of the Washington Monument. I don't know what your problem is. Anyway,
also your car could get broken into multiple times in one night.
No, my car got broken into the old place I lived, though, in Old Town, Alexandria. That happened once. That was fun.
Anyway, it's neither here nor there.
That was more ghetto than where I live right now, definitely.
Okay.
But it was, that was cheap. That was $500. That's cheap for a year.
Anyway, we're getting distracted.
Yeah, so.
Let me talk more about how glamorous my life is in Europe.
Yeah, okay. Europe is
no, wonderful. Not really. I don't have anything to say.
Well, folks, lots of things have gone on. It's been, as is often the case, sometimes we're approaching a show and I wonder, what are we going to talk about this week? Not a lot's been going on. It's been slower. We'll make it work. It's fine. And then in like one day, a cavalcade of Mormondom will fall upon us and wash over us like a cleansing bath. And then we will be left with so much great material. And there is much of it this week. I mean, we've cleansed
and bathed is what will be left.
We've got secret recordings at BYU. We've got the bigger my big thing
before we get to that, Jeff, I bought my first pair of sweats ever. And this is meaningful because I'm a 6'7" giant, and I've never owned a pair of sweats because they don't make them long enough for me. Until I found the extra large tall variety. And now my life has changed. I haven't put pants on in 3 days. This is what the rest of the world got to live all through their teenage years. Hot dang, this is amazing.
Why are you the way you are?
Jeff, I am happily single because I'm living life on my terms.
About the things you choose to be.
These sweatpants, I'm wearing sweatpants, a hoodie, and Uggs. And I'm like, hey, teenage girls have it figured out. This is what life is really about.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great for you. I'm really happy. That's wonderful. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, the big news of the week, Jeff, I think we can all agree, is that more single women can teach seminary now.
Slow clap.
We did it. We did it. This is what ordained women was going for.
Was this in their charter? I don't think this was actually listed in the charter. But
I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm optimistic this is a win
for
them.
But what's really happened here? What has changed policy-wise?
So what's different now is that mothers with children at home and divorcees are now allowed to teach seminary. That wasn't always the case. It used to be you couldn't teach. You could teach while you had no kids, and then when you had kids, gone.
Yeah, right.
And if you were divorced, you're just out of luck.
Does divorcee apply to men and women as far as the ruling? Before...
Yeah, well, men is... Go ahead.
Were divorced men able to teach before? That's what I'm wondering. So
divorced on either side, I believe, disqualified you. Also, men still, if you're a single man of any sort past a certain age, I believe it's 31... You are you're disqualified. You can't teach.
31 is like the year of doom in the
Mormon 31
community.
Is a tough year. Being 32, I don't feel the consequence, the weightiness of 31. And I look at this and I say, well, people, like, I am still of value. I can still help here. I'm still as smart as I was 2 years ago. Nay, I've read somewhere around 20 books or so in that time, I believe I'm smarter. Why am I not allowed
to help? It is funny, the whole 31 thing. I mean, not just, they kick you out of the YSA wards. That's the first thing. But then if you're a temple worker, you get kicked out. You can't be a single temple worker over 31. You can't teach CES or seminary if you're over 31 and unwed. It's a very interesting choice of year. And it is very, it's harsh to men. I'm grateful for the steps we're taking for the women, because I think it's, you know, women, of course, we believe it's great, you know, traditional things, with families, women raising kids in the home. I'm all behind that. But I like them taking down the barrier and saying, but if your family life is different and your choice is that you want to be a professional seminary teacher in Utah, you know, somewhere where it's paid, where it's a regular job, then we are not going to put that as a barrier anymore, even if you've got young kids at home. Because that is your choice. We still counsel you, but that is your choice. We're not.
Now.
But men, we still get shafted.
Well, men still get the shaft, but to their credit, men, I feel like, are more deviant than women, right? Like men are getting into more trouble typically with young female students. And so I see there being I mean, if I had to choose between sweet old Lady Bertha and creepy old Rob Lowe, I'm going to choose sweet old Lady Bertha because she's harmless. She's not, you know, like, what's going to happen? Not always the case. I mean, that's not always true. I'm sure there's plenty of horror stories. But, like, I feel like if you're going to err on the side of single women and not single men. So, fair. But there's good dudes out there, and I'm one of them, and I just want... I mean, can I just volunteer in the temple, please?
Al just wants to be hugged.
I just want to be... Yeah. Yeah.
Hug him.
So anyway, this is great, though. Also, I was talking to somebody the other day that was shocked that we had a paid clergy so far as Institute goes. Did you know that the Institute and seminary, obviously there are paid positions, and they're like well paid. It's like into the $80,000 range for some.
Well, for whom? Really?
For like a director, a regional director of institute, yeah.
Well, for a regional, yeah, but think about that. Is that well paid if it's a regional director? That means you've worked up from being a teacher and then the local institute director, and then eventually you're all the way up to a regional director. So, you know, yeah, you're firmly entrenched in middle management at that point. So
it sure beats social work.
Well, that's unless you like social work and value it.
I mean, from a pay scale.
Not always. Social work can also make some good cash. Not gonna
please.
Seriously, it can.
This is something that I didn't realize that people didn't know. But there is definitely a paid variant of Mormon education, and they pay people just because at some point it needs to be like a serious job, and you can't just show up and wing it, right? And so they're trying to.
Well, not just that. I mean, I think they pay them where they pay them in markets such as Utah, where it's time release and people go and, you know, they leave.
You're there 8 hours a day. You're not showing up.
And it's a class period. It's a legitimate full time job because there's enough critical mass to do it. And they don't want to just be strong people and just do seminary at 5 a.m. like everybody.
Now, here's my thing with some of that is really, I mean, as long as it's not like corrupting anybody or anything like that, but like, what better way to spend the church's money than to like benefit our youth? I don't mind it at all.
And I don't mind that it's paid because they're not clergy. It's just like saying, you know, well, yeah, you'd pay a college professor. You would pay a teacher at a private school that was teaching religion courses. I think it's just the same concept, you know, in these cases. So I don't take issue with it being for payment because it's a livelihood for the people who do it. I've had some great institute teachers in the past, and that was their full-time job. I mean, oftentimes it seemed like they were failed at other careers and then they became CES instructors, but that's okay. They were great humans and, you know, you loved them. Good time.
The one thing that I have noticed is like some of the guys that, maybe are there because it's a career. Do you ever get the sense that it's a little bit more contrived? Like they tell the same stories with a little bit too much polish. It's not as raw as some of the other guys.
It's just like when President Monson gives the same talk he gave in 1980 in 2014 General Conference. Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't even believe anymore.
Now, to that point, you also realize that like the Quorum of the Twelve, they get a living stipend, right?
I've always been very curious about having that be more transparent, what the stipend is. I understand if the church doesn't want to make all of its finances transparent for whatever reason, but because I think in the course of our time doing this show, we've seen many different sources or people in the know come our way. A lot of different allegations for what the stipends are, and some of, you know, they've seemed to be pretty outlandish, honestly, for the kind of money they have. But it's one thing if you look at if it's very high, if that is just money or if that is an overall operating budget. Because if you look at the way the 12 are, it's effectively a board of directors, and they oversee different silos of the organization, more or less. And so if an overall operating budget, that probably includes all of their travel, room, and board for whatever they have to do, potentially staff. You know, we don't know all the ins and outs of it. Because like if you're a member of Congress, for example, you get your annual salary, but you also have an allotted amount of a budget for your congressional office. And you choose to do with it what you will as far as staff you hire and things that you do. But, you know, I think it's probably a similar model.
I'm of the persuasion of so long as the money is not being stashed away and like living in excess and things like that, as long as Dieter Uchtdorf isn't taking frivolous flights in Blue Angel planes, and
he would never.
I'm totally fine with that. We want them focusing on the work, and like if our money goes to support their ability to do that, I feel like that's a smart way to spend it. But in the effort to have people not be surprised by some of the stuff that's a real thing in the church, I don't know. Let's be more open with that and discuss it. Does anybody have a problem with it? Speak up.
I don't. I would not mind seeing the operating budgets. I think that's fair.
I wouldn't mean that would be a good piece of auditing to share, I think.
Yeah. I mean, we get it because if stuff comes from tithing money, that is the Lord's money. Ergo, technically, from a faith-based standpoint, we don't have any business in that sense, I guess, you know, like where it goes, because it's not like it's our investment and they have to answer to us as shareholders, even though it's easy to look at it that way. But it's the Lord's money, and we are entrusting the Lord's anointed to use it for its purpose. The one thing that does irk me, though, is when you see a lot of stuff go around about how, you know, like I saw this in a group actually this week where I think some, you know, sometimes missionaries will come and visit your family just to teach you the lessons again. It's just an act of family just to do it.
Yeah.
And I think they were teaching about tithing and or maybe it was tithing settlement. I think it was tithing settlement, actually. And then a person I know, and then they asked their kid, like, so do you know what tithing goes to? And the kid lists off, like, temples and meeting houses and to build malls. This is like a little kid who's been around parents. But I don't believe the church is lying to us when they stress that things like City Creek, however controversial, were not funded by tithing money. The church has plenty of investments elsewhere that have nothing to do with tithing. And I'm confident they can develop real estate without the need for our 10%. I don't think it has to do with that.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. Speaking of going back to sort of women's things, our old friends at Ordained Women, clearly they haven't had enough press lately because, you know, nothing's going on. So they say, we got to get back in it. Got to make a media splash. And the proposed way to make a media splash this time is to hold a crowdfunding endeavor to have a billboard off of Interstate 15 in Salt Lake City that will just show something that says, "Faith precedes the miracle. Merry Christmas from Ordained Women." And it has a purplish, it's nicely designed.
Now Jeff, I understand you're being a little bit flippant here, but like, can we all agree that their approach as of late has been significantly better than their approach?
Well,
as
yeah,
because
their approach, their approach of late, ever since they got, having Kate Kelly excommunicated, what did not reflect well upon their organization, of course. So yeah, I think they've had to regroup.
Well, I think that's a fine way. You know, if I'm a movement, I think this is sort of a fine message to send. Just like,
yeah,
hey,
okay.
We're silent supporters. We're in. I think a billboard for any reason is a dumb idea, just because it's a billboard and it's poor marketing. However, I'll take this over six discussions on why we're right any old day.
No, there's nothing wrong with it at all. I mean, hey, you want to wish us Merry Christmas? Then wish us Merry. I wasn't trying to be too flippant. I think I was being flippant because I think it's like a waste of resources, just like you do, because it's like, what, a billboard? And while people will be happy about it and it's fine they do it, I think the majority of Utah residents, I think I can say this, will go by that billboard and roll their eyes.
No,
I would say there'll be plenty who will be like, all right, great, and good for them. But I think majority of people will be like, oh, brother. Why is this? This will be like when the atheists were trying to put up billboards and billboard companies in Utah wouldn't allow them to do it, which is kind of interesting.
Freedom of religion,
folks, unless you're not Mormon.
Did you know? Yeah. Did you know that the creator of the epic miniseries Battlestar Galactica that was then reduced by others later into an even better miniseries, Glenn Larson, also creator of Magnum P.I. and various other TV shows that we know.
Knight Rider. Come on.
Yep. Smart dude. So he passed away. So in his memory, so say we all, Jeff. So say we all. I feel like this post of reasons why Al is not married is getting longer as this show goes on.
Probably. Well, it's pretty much every day of your life.
I feel like we could have a weekly summary of reasons this week why Al is not married.
Well, we used to have one of our listeners on Facebook used to at least do summaries of quotes that were said on the show during the week. If you remember this?
Yeah.
Maybe a year or so ago. I don't know where you went. That was funny. I enjoyed seeing a hilarious synopsis of all the terrible things we say during an episode. So if you hear this, please bring that back. That was good.
If you're listening.
Whoa!
All right.
Don't mess with Jimmy Eat World. I know it better than you. You can't do that.
You're very good. I'm super smart.
I got one more.
Did you see this sort of goofy survey going around?
I like that this is pretty much big news as far as social media goes, and Al is reducing it.
Well,
too. Did you see the goofy survey?
Everybody fell in love with this. It's a Mormon gender issues. Essentially, this is that crappy friend you have that's in grad school that is messaging everybody privately saying, "I need you to go take my Qualtrics survey." please, I just need 100 responses so it's significant. that's what's going on here. So good. We got somebody that's doing a survey. I just don't care. I like what values it's bringing. You're a fan of it, Jeff. Why do you care?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm a fan of it. I'm fine with anyone just doing
it. My mother took it and said, it's because you posted it up there. I was like, no, that's stupid. Who posted it? She says, on This Week in Mormons. And I said, we would never post such stupidness.
I had to.
And then I realized, Jeff runs everything, but
it's like when you hold off on posting on something because you don't want to, and then you realize you have no choice because everyone else is doing it. It's like everything Peggy Fletcher Stack writes. It's like you say you're not going to comment on it because it doesn't matter.
You want to be above it. You want to be better than that.
But then everyone dives in and you say, we have to have our piece. We did post it, but we had a disclaimer that reminded people it clearly had an agenda. Surveys have agendas. That's okay. But it showed its hand pretty quickly out the gate.
Then why are we participating in it? Why do we care?
Let your voice be heard. If you don't like the survey, if you don't like the questions, then that's a forum to do it.
Then
we also
throw the questions.
We also posted they offered a feedback form, a separate little Google Doc.
Answer A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D.
Yeah, it was a weird. So did you take the survey though, Al?
No, of course not. I'm against it.
So you haven't.
I'm against like blatant social media whoring.
Is that what this is?
I feel it is, yes.
I found it was interesting. I don't mind because the church has done surveys on this before, but I think even the problem is I feel like you have two different sides of the camp right here. You've got
of the coin.
Yeah, because the church's side is fine, but that is the church's agenda, and some of the questions they ask don't leave it open-ended to ask if anyone's ever actually felt maligned as a woman in the church or just things like that. You know, they're not going to word it in that way. But then you go to this other side of it, and of course it's, people are just saying like, you know, obviously inequality is a reality in the church. How do you feel about it? And you know, so it's not perfect one way or the other, unfortunately.
I'm just telling you, there are truly plenty... There are plenty of grad students wishing that people would care as much about their surveys. And universally, I feel like we were all on the same page where we just said, we don't care about your crappy surveys.
Well, who does? So they're, yeah. So they ask you how you hear about it.
You like do.
Well, the surveys itself are fine. Like, I don't mind that if you're doing good stuff, like where it says, if you would, from a spectrum of fully support to completely opposed.
But if you're a nefarious survey taker, then that's bad, Jeff. We got to be universal here. We are against surveys.
No. I'm saying I like surveys when they're done well. The problem with this survey is no matter what its intention, the survey itself is wanting as for methodological accuracy. And I like the funny thing is, this is the great thing. I love in some of the more open-minded, non-reform Mormons, as they're starting to call themselves, because, you know, it's all about inclusiveness and everyone's different and, you know, we need to love people and not be judgy, and I think that's true. Except, who are they judgy about? They're judgy about the so-called TBMs, the true-believing Mormons, whom they will mock relentlessly.
I thought you hated that name.
I do hate that phrase, and it just cracks
me. Why would you use it? Why do you propagate
this? I said so-called. And so it just cracks me up when you're on these boards. And it's like, yeah, we love, you know, everyone needs to be open-minded. But then, of course, anyone who seems to just call into question what they're doing is obviously some sort of mindless TBM who doesn't know what they're doing. You know, it's just the hypocrisy of it cracks me up. And I saw this with the survey with many people, including myself, who I don't care as much about the content of the survey, but just the way it was structured and that it is flawed because it leads the respondent, which you're not supposed to do, and it doesn't provide a balance of answers, right? It's, you know, it's very clear what the agenda is. And so that's my critique of the survey. I don't mind a nicely done survey that says, let's talk about gender issues in the church. Like, it's a legitimate concern, so let's get a good, real sample of it.
Why don't you put the survey out there?
I could. And so I took issues with this, and I found that, of course, those who love this survey have come back at many who question just the methodology of it, these true academic context, as assuming we are, of course, that we just hate the content itself, that we are TBMs who don't want to talk about these things. I've seen so much of this over the past couple of days.
It's poppycock.
It is, and it cracks me up. There are people who will be uncomfortable with the survey itself, That's fine. But don't just rope in people who say, no, this survey is written poorly, to assume that it means that those people are uncomfortable with the issues at play, because that's not necessarily the case all. And also, if you want to get a decent breadth of responses from a good sampling.
This is a statistician speaking here, people.
People from all walks of Mormonism, not just the left.
Jeff is a market research professional. Listen to this.
Al, you've been there. I've written surveys with you. Of
Ukrainians. I know. I'm supporting you.
So
I'm like Mike to the Krispy Kreme. I'm just in the back here, like,
yeah,
propping
yeah,
you up.
Exactly. You're Mike. I know what you're saying, though. But what it's like, it's fine. Surveys have a target. People, you know, they always have screeners. Like, you might screen out certain demos, and that's okay, and you don't want to talk to them. But the point of this is to say, like, wouldn't you want the opinion of more traditional mainstream Mormons about these issues, rather than creating a survey that seems to pull so hard to people who would so obviously be ordained women supporters? There's nothing wrong with being an ordained women supporter and believing in
you
that.
You just want a broad sample
in that cause, but you try to broaden it out, and then you complain.
Right,
it's stupid. So right, I have plenty of problems with the way the survey was created, but not with the content itself. So if you've taken it, do that. And if you want to leave them feedback, we posted it on our Facebook wall, so you can leave honest feedback of your thoughts on the survey, which I think would be useful for all involved. Thank you. Thank you, Al.
See, yeah. No, thank you for ranting. I felt good. The Mitt Romney spoke at a forum of fire or devotional.
I got in trouble for this for yesterday on Facebook.
For what?
For posting the way I posted it.
What did you say?
Well, what I did is first I called him Ol' Mitty, which apparently people were upset about, and they said
name Ol' Mitty.
Yeah, because some people said you wouldn't call the president O'Berry, and I'm like, I have before, maybe I shouldn't, but either way, Mitt Romney's not the president of the United States and doesn't command the same level of respect. But
he could have been.
It's mainly because I think
we would call him Old Ross Perot-y.
So I think it's because I used a Unicode thing so I could do strike through for humor. So it says Ol' Mitt just spoke at the BYU strike through devotional, and then it says forum today. Give it a watch. And remember that this man could have been strike through prophet, and then it says president. So I said that as a joke, trying to say, you know, he spoke at not the devotional. He's not the prophet. He spoke at the forum. He was trying to be president. Wordplay, people. So maybe those who were on mobile devices couldn't see the strike through. And
yeah,
no.
I'm sure that was why your joke wasn't funny.
And they thought it said that this man could have been the prophet president.
I blame myself for that.
I don't believe Mitt Romney can be
the
prophet president.
Oh, you guys, you're on a mobile device, so you're not getting the full essence of what my joke was going to be.
That's usually my understanding when people don't understand me. It's usually
I love Mitt Romney's, as he let out, he said, it's great to be here together with everybody again today. When I went here, BYU, he said the Beatles were the only boy band, the Cougar Eat only served cafeteria food, and Emma was Joseph's only wife. Ba-da-cha!
That's actually pretty bold, I think. Straight up taking the controversial, in a way.
It was funny, though.
Polygamy topic. Yeah. Where were you hiding 2 years ago, Mitt? We've asked this so many times. Mitt. Had Mitt been so genuine, he might have persuadest me to vote Republican.
Jeff, will he run again in 2 years?
Well, just like the gender issues survey that asks me to predict the likelihood of priesthood being given to women, I will offer up my opinion on other things that I have no way of possibly knowing.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to say there's about a 63% chance that he runs. I know this because I know this.
How do you know?
It doesn't matter how I know. The key is that I know. Also, what's the likelihood that we open up China? I'm going to give it about 83%.
Okay, I like it.
I don't know if it'll run again. The Republican field is decidedly weak going into 2016, so we'll see what happens with that.
Anyway, he was very candid, and I mean, a good little spiel. Again,
yeah, I mean, that was just his joke, but I think he gave. It's kind of funny because this
is
of course,
his relevancy that he is a failed, presidential candidate. Is that what his legacy will be now?
That's
the only reason why he's there, right? He's not there because he was governor 10 years ago.
Well, he's there because he's also just a former person, but also, of course, a BYU alumnus. I mean,
now he's kitschy.
He's kitschy. You went to the movies with him once, so.
I sure did.
You know.
What do we see? 42.
What oh, that crazy. Movie was terrible.
Did you see Interstellar yet?
No.
Gosh, dang it, Jeff.
We've all been sick.
At this point, there's no longer a spoiler alert needed. You've had plenty of time to go see it.
No, spoiler alerts are needed. It's just because I've been holding off because I've wondered if it's worth it to go bother
How
to see it on the
How have you not
IMAX.
Been on the internet in the last month?
I'm good at avoiding spoilers when I want to. Really good.
Let's see.
Okay, anyway, but that was a... Yeah, good job, Mitch.
Mockingjay, then, this weekend. Go see that and
oh, my
Interstellar.
Goodness. Sorry, Al. I'm going to the funeral for my grandmother.
But I mean after, Jeff. After the funeral, grab some fried chicken and just, you know.
After the funeral, we'll say like, well, guys, this was great. I think what grandma would really want, given how whimsical she was not, we should go and see the Hunger Games.
I actually remember at my own grandma's funeral, my grandma and my dad's, I went down and like a funeral is hard because you have this like this build up to this kind of a big cry and you have the big cry and then it's done and you're like, okay, I'm sad. But big gulps.
Yeah.
Like, you can't stay sad forever. You got to go.
No, you can't stay sad forever. I mean, like, yeah. In this case, I'm sad to lose my grandma, but she's also been in decline for a while. So in many ways...
She would want you to see Interstellar and Mockingjay in a back-to-back double feature is what I'm suggesting.
I wish they still did those.
I know.
They probably do them in Chillicothe, Missouri, because that's what happens in places like that.
Home of sliced bread, Jeff. Sliced bread was invented... There.
Is Avatar playing yet in Chillicothe? Did that finally get there?
Avatar. Yeah, but it's only in 2D, so that's a tough break.
not worth it. So other big news, of course, President Eyring has been at the big Vatican.
Hal Eyring.
Yeah, Hal and the Pope. That's what it's called. So he's at the Vatican for this giant group of summit at the Vatican all about families. It's very interesting.
Jeff, it's Pope Hal. Pope Hal. Popal. Pope Hal.
He's in the Papal State. So we are...
Pope Hal.
We're mixing, and we are milking this for all it's worth. I mean, if you would go to the Mormon Newsroom, or you go to the Mormon Newsroom's Twitter feed, they made its own banner that said, like, Vatican Conference. It's funny because all I've heard from is President Eyring. It's not like they're covering stuff said by other leaders about, you know, what things of value
well,
they have to bring to the
President table. Eyring spoke all 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was pretty short, so he spoke in his little thing. His remarks, I believe the one that's getting the most play was that he called for a renaissance of marriages in that
was all the Latin he knew, so that was why he used the word renaissance.
Yeah, well, he's in Italy, so yep. You know, it's an homage.
It's a renaissance land.
Actually, he's in the Vatican. I'm sorry, a separate state, separate. So it's good. You can actually see the full remarks at the newsroom or post them on our site. Only 10 minutes long, and decidedly not with the panache that comes from General Conference. I don't know if he's jet lagged or something, but he was just kind of sitting in his chair, just kind of reading his remarks and finishing
really?
Them. No, it was good. It didn't have the jovialness. He still made some jokes. I don't know how to explain it. The air about him was not the same as Conference, but it was good. And I like the idea of a renaissance because what he's saying is that it's not, he wasn't, of course, anyone who wants is going to find issue with all the, you know, men, women, gender roles talk, whatever. But I like the point of just a renaissance, just saying like what your relationship is in your family. Have a renaissance. Like, get in there. Re-inspire it. Kickstart
Wherever
it.
Wherever you are, renaissance.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you know, you got to defend the institute of marriage between a man and a woman, which is important. But experience that renaissance. And I think it's easy because relationships of any variety can become stagnant or predictable. And it's a great reminder to always really try to bring about a change. And in this case, he's calling on the world to remind him of the value of a families of men and women raising children in love. And that, you know, the world seems to have forgotten how important that truly is and that we have a chance to remind them and do it.
That's cool. I like that we're having a forum at the Vatican. I feel like, it's good that we're participating. That's great.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. The church loves this. Come on. Pictures of our first counselor with the Pope. We don't get that very often. It's a great photo op. So much really? So that one picture I've seen on no fewer than I think like 7 different church outlets in the past 3 days.
Ooh.
It's even on LDS.org. That picture is everywhere.
So let's see. Also, the church has released their final renderings of the last stage of Provo MTC expansion.
monsters.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but isn't this the slow play? Because they were like, hey, we'll revise our stuff and we can do this a little differently. And then they're like, okay, we approve this. And then I'm like, ha-ha, here's the next phase.
I'm gonna demand that they turn the lights off at 10 p.m.
This is a big building. And what? So right now we're like 85,000 missionaries, 87,000 something. Are we expecting that to settle down to
They expect it'll settle down somewhere in about probably the 70s or high 60s.
In the 70s. So the MTC, I mean, it'll be fine. Does there ever become a point where we have two U.S. MTCs?
I've wondered that. Because, yeah, we can continue to try to expand it, but the bottom line is the MTC doesn't occupy a very big footprint, and it doesn't have a lot of, you know, doesn't have places to go. And we've talked about this a lot.
We own 2% of Florida. Could we not put an MTC there?
We could, and we probably should. Like, honestly. We own the land there. It's East Coast, so you can send East Coast people or people going to the Caribbean or Latin America. Chuck them down there. Get them out of the way.
Yeah, there'd probably be a lot easier to find good Spanish speakers that spoke real Spanish instead of that crappy American.
If you're in Florida, you're going to find Cubans, and Cubans are almost unintelligible to the rest of us. Bless them.
No, well, in food, but in language, Jeff.
No, not in food. Cuban food is delightful. Give me some ropa vieja.
The plantains and the, oh, yeah.
Ugh. Come on, you remember the Cuban restaurant we went to in Miami?
That was great.
It's one of the most generic things you can ever say.
El Farolito.
But yeah, these plans they've alluded to before, because you know they've gone through years of trying to expand the MTC. There was that central tower.
Still, these are big buildings. These are like 6-7 story buildings that are.
But if you remember, they're going to build these over where they're going to be demolishing those laundry facilities, and that's where it's going to. And they're going to reshape the things. They're also going to build this big sort of promenade, and now vehicles will. So there'll be more room for vehicles to drive up and drop off your missionaries. I just
want to go back to having the meeting.
That's what I was going to say. I call for a return to the meeting. I think that's an important moment for parents, and it's so much more poignant and valuable than just dropping your kid off at a curb and just saying like, all right, well, have fun. See ya.
I agree.
I thought it was so useful for my family to be able to sit there with the mission, with the MTC president, and really just kind of get a rundown of what was going on, what to expect, expressions of gratitude.
So I'm guessing that the pro con here is that the pro is the missionary doesn't have like 2 days of crying, right?
Yes.
But the con is that the family doesn't get those 2 days of crying. I mean the family doesn't get that like I remember this moment for the rest of my life sort of moment.
Yeah. Instead, you just remember taking a picture outside of some door and just saying. I mean, I'm glad I didn't have to experience that. Neither did my brother. We all went out before they changed that and. It makes me sad to think about many years from now dropping my own children off and simply – or maybe part of it is to dissuade trips to Utah. I don't know, right? Because if you're dropping them off at the curb of the MTC, what's the difference from just dropping them off at the airport at this point and just saying like, have a good one.
A trip to Utah, that was a blast for me. When I went and dropped my best friend off, that was like one of the key things that stood in my memory as I went to prepare for my own mission. I love it. Anyway, neither here nor there.
Anyways,
Jeff, we are very long-winded today.
Other good note, the Phoenix
Temple. Kick it up a notch, huh?
The Phoenix Temple was dedicated over the weekend. All the leaders, I'm assuming President Eyring was not there, but they went down to Phoenix to the less discussed Phoenix Temple compared to its Gilbert counterpart across the valley. But it got dedicated. It's up and going. North Phoenix, you're taking care of it.
There's two recognized temples. The Mesa and the Phoenix now, yes? That's what we have in Arizona?
No, Arizona's got like 5 temples, dude.
I said recognized by us temples.
What do you mean by recognized by us?
I don't recognize Gilbert as even a city, let alone a temple.
Actually, Gilbert
Nor does Snowflake or Scottsdale get anything.
Scottsdale doesn't have a temple. They have the other temple in the Gila Valley. And actually, Al, Gilbert is not a city. It's the largest incorporated town in America. So, I found you in your lie. You don't have to recognize it as a city.
Good night.
But the Phoenix Temple is only especially interesting because our very first episode of this show, and this is our 250th right here today. So our very first episode of the show was called The 30-Foot Temple. And we talked about how the Phoenix Temple was being forced to undergo rapid redesigns because of opposition from the local neighbors. And you have what you have today. So,
Put a link to that first show somewhere in the description so that we can.
Sure, but I have to enable our feed to allow for episodes that long ago. which apparently breaks podcatchers that people put in app stores. I don't know. Whatever. Keep talking.
Don't enable the feed then. Let's see here. Oh, at BYU we had some secret recordings surface.
Okay.
This was kind of funny. So they started finding some.
Did Cecil Samuelson get on the record saying?
No, these were sort of spy-esque recording devices that recorded in place, so it didn't broadcast anywhere, or do anything goofy like that. So they had them taped to like in bathroom stalls. They had them taped in classrooms. I mean, they picked some very odd places to record sounds. Like if you recorded my bathroom stall visit, I feel like that. Yeah, it's not impressive. I'm not proud of what happened.
It's a cool case of whodunit, though. I mean, maybe there's a PI. Maybe someone hired a PI, then, and the PI isn't work.
There's a professor that's like, I record my lectures all the time. Would you like a copy of them? And they were like, had it hidden under his desk and stuff. But they're taking it very seriously.
Sure, as one does.
And they're going for it. They're going to bust this guy.
In my last mission area in Spain, we actually had an espionage store in my area. We walked by it every day. I like that its name was just Espionage Store, and they sold just like random stuff like that.
Sorry. That's Spanish. It's Espionosa.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually
Italian, apparently.
Italian.
But anyways, it just made me think of that. I just love the thought of just going to a store and being like, yeah, I'd like a one of those microphones that's inside a pen that I can put in my pocket. You got one of those?
Oh, I'm looking for a nanny cam for fun.
And they had them. Other stuff. New York Times is loving Mormons of late, and that's why they wrote a lengthy article all about the quest to allow beards at BYU. We've reported on this before, but here it is again. The noble cause to allow the beards to be at the Y. I think it's a fairly written piece. I don't think, you know, you could read it and say it looks embarrassing for BYU or makes it look a little backwards. But in my opinion, the beard ban is kind of backwards. And so I don't mind it being called out for what it is.
You want the beards back. You're for them.
You still have to have dress and grooming standards. Like you can't just look, maybe the beard rule would be, you can't just look scruffy and you can't grow out a lumber sexual type beard, which is
that's so much harder to,
it's
so much harder to police.
You see this? You see what I have? I have a groomed beard, Al. I trim it. I shave my neck. That is, my beard should be permissible with the honor code. My beard is perfectly beautiful.
That's so much harder to police, though, because at what point are you like, no, it's too scruffy.
Look at me. I'm like Prussian royalty.
You look homeless. I'm in sweatpants. I look like a man.
I'm wearing a Canada sweatshirt. They don't have homeless people there.
That's fair. That is fair.
So what do you think about beards, dear listeners? Let us know.
I think it's fine. I didn't mind shaving for a couple of years while I was in college, though.
I'd push it. Maybe I wouldn't shave for like one day or two and try to go take a test at the testing center just to see if anything would happen, if they'd let me in. I never had a problem, though.
No.
Also, the testing center is the worst.
Let's see. There's other news things. Bill Maher hates us.
Shocking.
We know this.
He says we're a sex cult.
Yeah.
If we were a sex cult, BYU students would not be so uptight. I'm sorry.
We're like an anti-sex cult. Here's the problem
exactly.
with sex.
We are an anti-sex cult.
Here's the problem with sex in our religion. I feel like the olden day guys got it a lot better than we did, and now we're being punished for our father's transgressions. The old guys that were living the high life around sex, now we have no sex.
And yep, pretty
frankly,
much.
It's just an unfortunate turn of events. So don't you call us a sex cult.
Get it right.
We are a non-sexy cult.
Likewise, Lawrence O'Donnell, another pundit, Lawrence O'Donnell over there at MSNBC. Lawrence has often had meaner things to say about the church. He's no big fan, but he had a good little piece on there where he had Richard Bushman, author of Rough Stone Rolling, and Lori Goodstein, who's a New York Times reporter who's been covering polygamy, and this is going back a few weeks, of course, but talking about the polygamy essays and things that have been going on in the church. It's a nice little video, though, frank discussion. Nice to see Richard Bushman, even though I sat next to him once in church, and he did not even talk to me. Come on, Richard Bushman. Yes.
Well, you should have said something to him. What did you say to him?
Actually, no, I was sitting next to our buddy Lauren, and we were sitting next to Richard Bushman, and I was trying to get Lauren to be like, hey, Lauren, work the introduction. Let's get some twim talk in there. Let's make this happen. Lauren failed, as he does at many things, except for life. Lauren's a great
guy. He just wanted you to take some initiative, Jeff, is what it is.
So I love the Jollyologist because it's
weird. This is like a Patch Adams from morning.
It really is. There's a doctor whose name I will read to you once the article loads. Galen Shoemaker is a doctor. And
he was always going to be a Jollyologist.
Well, it's a she. And she likes to put on the noses and the big glasses and the things and, you know, frighten the kids into wellness, basically, as a Jollyologist. And it's just wonderful to see. It's Patch Adams part deux.
Part deux.
The point is she's LDS. She doesn't speak much whether her faith informs her Jollyologist career track, but still it's good.
Let's see. Also, it's just some random ones. I love that you found this article where a Utah woman took a picture for her license with a colander on her head claiming religious freedom. She says she is a Pastafarian. Heyo. And so she has a great driver's license video with a colander on her head. Religious freedom in Utah, people, is what we're doing.
Yeah, this is pretty much everything we've been waiting for with religious freedom. I love it. I want to wear a colander on my head. I wonder if Virginia will let me do it.
The one other, let's see, we have one other decent article here. Noel Picus Pace and Al Fox, they are a famous duo now, are calling for
they're taking it on the road.
Family Discovery Day. They want you to go and find your family. Find your genealogy and get started at rootstech.org/familydiscoveryday.
Which is being held on Valentine's Day 2015. Bad day, folks. You don't think Al Fox wants to be with her husband? Or Noel, for that matter? What is this?
where's Noel Picus Pace get the shaft in this?
I mean, goodness gracious. I like that we talked about Al Fox in the sense of, like, why do we all love Al Fox? Oh, because she's a cute blonde girl with tattoos who joined the church, and that makes her special because
she gets firesides now, Jeff.
I know, because I think she's great, but it's kind of funny when we think about the fact that she breaks with our mores in the church. That, oh,
we're
my
proud
goodness,
of that. She's a rebel.
She has tattoos and joined the church. Ergo, she is special, and we need to highlight her.
I don't think that's the appropriate use of ergo.
I'm using ergo. Argo?
The one other great one was that weird LDS Living article about when your child doesn't fit in. They have a picture of a kid with a shirt and tie and long hair.
He looks like every child in a mid-90s family comedy.
And their suggestions for how to handle this craziness is to be welcoming, be understanding, be patient, be sincere. They're suggesting you be a human, that you be a real person and don't exclude a six-year-old because his mom's really into long hair. It's not his fault. LDS Living, what are you? And why are you the way that you are?
It's funny because commenting on this is to imply that there is an issue at play in the first place. And of course,
it's a real thing. And well, it's not.
Yeah.
Jessica Carter, you weak-minded journalist.
I want Jessica Carter to be on this show. Let's have her defend her piece.
Bring her on so that we can attack her.
And then afterwards say, by the way, would you mind just sending us that audio file so I can put it together in post? Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate you playing ball.
Nice. Wait, for what?
Well, like if we had somebody on and it never went well, say, because we don't yank in their live stream and then dump it in. We always do everything in post-production where people send us their feed and then we put it all together. So how awkward would that be if you had an unfortunate experience with a guest and after all is said and done, you're like, great, thanks. By the way, could you please export that as a WAV file and put it in your Dropbox or something and send me the link so I could put the show together?
Like, F you guys.
How awkward would that conversation? That's really what happened with Nyland McBain, guys. She was upset and she was trying to be difficult about getting her stuff on the air. Not really. I'm lying. She's a dear.
She's a sweetheart. What a babe.
Everyone, I think we're done.
Wait. We want to do prescription drug abuse too.
Okay. Tell me about
prescription. We just got to rope it in. There's a guy that says that prescription drug abuse should be treated like alcohol under the sort of word of wisdom stuff, right? Like, so the idea, I guess, right now is if you are addicted to Vicodin, but you keep it to yourself, you know, there's nothing per se that says, like, it's not illegal drugs. It's not, I mean, you're still fine and temple worthy and ready to rock, right?
Yeah, but if you were like abusing alcohol and keeping it to yourself, same thing, right?
No, but I mean that's one of the questions that comes up in the interview. It's like word of wisdom, alcohol, tobacco, coffee. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was going to say, they only ask you if you keep the word of wisdom in a temple recommend interview, and then it's up to you to know the word of wisdom, which aside from the obvious things we refrain from, it's clear that we refrain from addictive or harmful substances.
Well, this is the hard part with this, though, is like, let's say you break your leg and you start taking Oxycontin or yeah. whatever your painkiller is, and then you just don't stop. You're not, like, in your mind, too. I've seen this a lot. We've actually reported on articles around this, especially in Mormon culture. There are a lot of people that... you know, they don't, if you don't admit that it's a problem, right? It's just, I have some pain. I get a headache and I take a couple of these and it makes me feel better. True. And, I mean, way over prescribing for dumb stuff. I mean, like clearly going through addictive behaviors, but there's nothing in our church that really is built to identify that and say, hey, this is a problem. You need to not do this.
That's
fair. Is there a place in the church to do that?
It's hard to say, like, does that mean you're not worthy of a temple recommend? Of course, we're not in that position, and I think this is generally probably up to a bishop's discretion. If it's that case where you're abusing drugs sort of unwittingly, it's another thing, I think, when you might have a... I don't think any addiction's willful. How do I stage this? But some people abuse prescription drugs not because they don't realize they have a problem and they're taking it when they don't need to. It's because they realize they feel better when they take it, so they abuse it like they would any other drug when they want to get a high or have a particular feeling. I hope I'm delineating well enough right there.
No. Well, I mean, the problem too is it's not like it's not something where it's a bishop's place per se. Like is it a bishop's place to say, it seems like you are you're doing this one addictive behavior too much. You're drinking way too much Coke. You're clearly addicted to it. I'd like you to stop before.
And therefore you can't temple recommend. You can't go to temple. Yeah. Okay.
That wouldn't be okay.
No, I don't think so. So that's a good point. It's interesting. Well, that's why this is an op-ed by RGB Rob.
Red, green, and blue Rob. Well, yep. Done. When you have a third son, I hope he plays for the Washington Redskins.
Also, RGB Rob has been a Utah resident for 33 years, which based on his picture appears to be his entire life. I'm just saying. He's a very intense looking fellow. Like, I'm worried he's going to crawl out of my computer screen and strangle me.
No, it's going to be nice. Anyway, all right, Jeff.
Cool.
Hey, you guys, you can send us emails, contact These Week in Mormons. If you've disagreed with or agreed with anything, I hope you will send harshly worded emails at us so that we can reply in kind. I'd love that. Also, you can visit us at thisweekinmormons.com and leave a comment on any of our posts. We're happy to engage with you there. We love it.
Also, there might be a social medium that you enjoy. Find that medium and engage with us on it.
It's whatever probably a Qualtrics survey if you're Jeff.
Well, what else would it be? That's where I hang out. I just do the survey over and over again, leaving responses, hoping that people will respond.
Yeah. So, well, that's it. That's fair.
Like in a social medium.
Reasons why Jeff is married and Al isn't.
Because I'm really good at taking surveys and knowing when to properly use the singular form of medium versus media, for example, and all associated plurals of eums, like tedium, mm-hmm. tedia.
Yeah.
Anyway, or curricula. Folks, join us on those things. Leave us reviews. Hang out with us. We're just glad to have you here and appreciate you taking the time to tune in. So thank you very much.
See you next week.
Bye, Al. Have a good week, folks. Another This Week in Mormons, episode 250. Thanks for joining us for these many, many, many times. And talk to you soon.
It's in the can.
Bye.